A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Cammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
Okay, that was me fainting. Oh my god, I am her favorite?
Flash.
Are you kidding me?
This whole time, we thought she was your favorite. It turns out you're her favorite, too.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Let's ship that Flash and Dinah. It is a thing now. You heard it here first, Arrow Squad. It is a thing. Dinah, I'm coming to Star City. I'll be there shortly. Oh, that is awesome. Oh, my God. Welcome, Arrow Squad, to episode 6 of season 6, titled Promises Kept. Hello, Cammy.
Hello, Flash.
You went above and beyond this weekend. You got to spend the weekend hanging out with a few of the stars of our show at the Heroes vs. Villains Fan Fest down in Atlanta.
I did. I was quite the lucky villainess this weekend.
Ah, and you were so kind to be able to get a recorded clip like that from Juliana Harkavy herself.
Well, I was happy to. she was quite tickled to hear about her number one fan.
Ah, yeah, I am going to have some sweet dreams tonight. So tell us, Cammy, like how was the fan fest? I mean, Stephen Amell started up the Heroes versus Villains idea, and he's been doing them all over the country. He does them like 3 or 4 a year, and you've been to a couple of them. So how was this one this weekend? What kind of, you know, what kind of celebrities were there? What were the events were going on?
This one was, it was pretty high energy because, I mean, it usually is around any of the cons around this time of season because, you know, it's approaching the crossover. So there's a lot of good spoilers for all the different shows or different teasers or new things coming out or new things to talk about. So it's always really fun around this time. But this one was particularly high energy because this was the first U.S. Heroes and Villains that Emily Bette Ricards, who plays Felicity, was ever at. And she usually doesn't go to U.S. cons in general, or really many cons at all. She's quite private. So it was really fun to have her there. And everybody was really, she was really high energy and fun. And I don't know, everybody was really happy to have her there. And there was quite a lot of cast at this one. I mean, there were a few more guests at this one than for most Heroes and Villains recently, I think. So it was really fun.
Well, that's good. You were doing quite a bit of tweeting during your time there. So I managed to follow some of it. You had quite a few fun things to say. But one of the highlights I thought was really, really cool. You actually got to ask a question of David Ramsey, Stephen Amell, and Emily Bette Ricards, you know, our Diggle, Oliver, and Felicity. And the question you asked got quite a rousing laughter of a response. So give us a quick rundown of that, because the three of them got a good kick out of that. So well done, Cammy.
I got a chance to ask them a question for one of their panels, and I had seen, you know, quite a few at this con in particular. There were quite a few miniature Felicities, mini Felicities, where they're like little kids dressed up as Felicity Smoke. It was really cute.
Right.
So I asked them, you know, when they see these sort of miniature versions of themselves running around, like, what do they want to say? What message do they want to give to these, like, little kids who are looking up to them as, you know, heroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of got a kick out of coming up with, like, mini names for the little ones. Like, you know, there's Mini Felicity, but, like, Diggle called the mini Diggles, like, Diglets. And it was just really cute. And they all had it was a variety of responses. Like Emily had a really, you know, touching response, and Steven's response was like, well, the first thing is don't murder. So it was really cute. I actually got to ask, I don't know if there's a recording of this. I got to ask Juliana and Rick a question as well. Rick Gonzalez, who plays Wild Dog, Juliana Harkavy, I'm acting as if I'm on a first name basis with her. I'm not, unfortunately, who plays Dinah.
Right.
I got to ask them a question as well. and they had a panel that was entitled like a new Team Arrow or the new faces of Team Arrow or something like that.
Cool.
And I asked them at what point when filming, did they start to feel like they weren't necessarily new anymore? Did they start to realize that they're sort of permanent fixtures in this team and start to feel like they're a part of, you know, the full Team Arrow? When did they start to feel that way?
Great question.
Oh, thank you. Both of them had a quite similar answer, which is that as their relationships with other members of sort of old Team Arrow grew, they started to feel more a part of it, but that they still have a feeling of newness because there is so much sort of history to the show, and that, you know, they had both been aware of the show or perhaps watched the show before. So they still have this sort of new energy and new excitement when they go to work every day because they do still sort of feel like they're new Team Arrows. It was a really cute answer. So
cool.
That's the extent of my questions from this weekend, I think. I met lots of other fans of the show, so that was really fun.
Cool. Did you meet any Arrow Squad members?
That's a good question. Yeah. I don't know is my short answer. I met quite a few people that, like, events like this, when we introduce ourselves to other people, like, I'll recognize, like, oh, I know you from Facebook, or I know you from Twitter, I know you from whatever, you know, like other people who have like Arrow fan accounts, you know. Mm-hmm. So there were other people that I like recognized their accounts or perhaps like recognized me, but I don't know specifically if it was Arrow Squad members or not. That's a good question.
Well, squad members out there, if you met our Cammy, please send us a note that you said, yeah, I met you, I was so-and-so, and then she can kind of connect you.
Let me know.
Well, I'm sure the fans would probably love to hear more and more about it, but we need to get to our show. So if you want to follow her adventures at the fest this weekend, just follow her Twitter feed. She was talking quite a bit all weekend long, so it's pretty fun stuff.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we got nothing really show news related, but we do have some positive news that we really would love to bring up.
Yeah.
We got some new reviews in iTunes, and because this Arrow Squad is not on my personal iTunes account, it's not connected, so I don't get any notifications that we got a new review, and I have forgotten to look over the last couple months, and there was two reviews sitting there, and we just need to share them because they're wonderful. So DaveGags12, back in the summertime, had gave us a 5-star rating, and he said, I just listened for the first time, had been searching for an Arrow podcast. The show's hosts are positive, informed, and entertaining. A must listen for any true Arrow fan. So we just want to give a shout out to DaveGags12 and say thank you so much for those wonderful words.
Thanks, Dave.
And then we got another one here very recently, just in October, from GoldGaga25. And they said, or the first they gave a 5-star rating, and they said, I've been listening to your podcast since season 5 of Arrow. Then I realized that I have not written a review for this amazing podcast. The hosts help the day go by with laughter and even sometimes tears. We see watching Arrow after all, laugh loud. Thank you for all the passion and dedication you put into each episode. I so very much recommend this podcast to Arrow lovers and DC fans.
Aww.
Wow. See, that's pretty amazing. So another shout out to you, GoldGaga25. Thank you so much as well for your kind words.
Aww.
That is
Flash,
amazing.
Those are so sweet. Those are melting my cold villainy heart.
See that, Arrow Squad, what you can do. If you send in some kind words, we're going to turn Cammy over in no time. But anyway, we totally appreciate that, guys. Like, if anyone else out there would love to leave us an iTunes review and rating, that would be spectacular. We'll definitely get it on the show as soon as we find out that it's on there. So thanks again.
You guys are so sweet. We appreciate that.
All right, let's get to some ratings and overall impressions, shall we?
Absolutely. So we are talking about episode 6. This is Promises Kept, and this is the second half of the Oliver and Slade saga, 2-episode little story.
Yes.
You want to go first?
You want me to kick it off?
I think you should.
All right. Well, starting on a high note, as sometimes we do, I am giving this episode 9 Paths to Darkness. We wanted more Slade, and we got almost a 2-part episode with him. This one takes off right after last week and answers all the questions we posed, or at least that I posed anyway, about what Slade will do, what will Oliver do, and it dives headfirst into what I was talking about last week, with Slade being mostly a decent person until the Mirakuru takes over and he loses his sanity and control. I love that we got to see his transition into darkness and what led him down to hunt Oliver for revenge, what led him down that path. I mean, if you look at how things played out, it turns out that Joe was the spark that started Slade's journey into madness. This really fleshed out what we had only had guesses at when he returned in season 2 as the main villain. Excellent performance by Manu Bennett. It just blew me away. This was his episode. We really get to see him showcase his struggle with redemption and his battle with guilt and uncertainty about what to do. And I have a feeling we're not going to be seeing him for quite a while with the way they had him walk off through the smoke at the end there and the type of music that was playing. It felt like a farewell for now, and I'm going to be honest here, I felt my eyes getting pretty watery. Especially the second time through, I actually cried because that moment hit even harder the second time through. So yeah, fantastic episode.
Aww. See, every time you go through your rating, it makes me like the episode more. So whenever I rate it lower and then you go first and you rate it higher, then I'm like, wait, is it actually like a half point higher than what I gave it?
Come on, let's see that rating slip up a little bit. Rise okay. to it, Cammy.
All right. So I'll get into mine. Okay. Your points are all excellent, and we'll come back to them because they'll all come back in our discussion points. But I'm with you on the whole Slade leaving, and I was a little like, oh, but does he have to go? Anyways, I gave the episode a 7.25. Which sounds low, but it's not really that low for me. But also, it's a little bit higher than last week's rating, which was the first of the two-parter. Okay. Certainly not a bad episode. And in fact, in many other seasons, this would probably have gotten a, like, best episode in ages comment from me. So I think I'm just a little spoiled by how strong this season is.
But there aren't were, we there all?
Were, right? Which is like, it's not a bad place to be.
No, not at all.
There were a few moments where it didn't quite live. It's pretty much the same thing I said last week. Didn't quite live up to the sort of tone, chemistry, delivery that I guess I've come to expect from Slade and like a Slade and Oliver happy episode. But it was better than last week in terms of delivering plot, like a continuous ongoing action and dialogue plot. And I guess I'm kind of torn on this because they have this approach that they have going on right now, both for the Slade and Oliver storyline and the Star City storyline, where they're kind of leaving every story hanging. So Diggle and the drug episode, Diggle and the drug, not episode, but the ongoing saga of that, Slade and Oliver and they're patching up and not patching up, Slade and the whole issue with his sons, the rest of Team Arrow, Dinah and Vigilante, Oliver and the, voting referendum thing, Felicity and Curtis and the company. There's just so many hanging storylines that were like sort of addressed, but not progressed forward. But the stories themselves are great. I just want to see more concrete progress on them. It seems like they're sort of brought up, but not moved forward. But maybe that's just me like wanting more. And if it's just me wanting more, then that would be a good thing. Because of course, any good story would leave you wanting more. So I'm kind of torn as to whether the like dangling storylines are a good thing or not. I actually brought it up on like the live after show I do, and one of the people who was listening to it, Amanda, said it's similar to what they do in telenovelas where they sort of have like several many storylines going on, nothing gets resolved until literally the last episode, and then it's like one big dramatic wrap up. Mm-hmm. And with comic books borrowing a lot from the format of like soap operas, it would make sense that perhaps that format might influence some of the like TV show comic book content as well. I don't know. Does any of this make sense?
Well, you're making sense, but I think when we get into our discussion later, I've got some pretty heavy counterpoints to some of that. So we'll see if I can change you around a little bit later on.
Yeah.
But just talking about the way you worded it, the stories don't seem to be they're being left hanging. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I kind of addressed that later. So we'll get to that. But I understand you. I just
I feel like feeling. I have like, I, there's certain things that I'm maybe not buying into or I'm concerned about, but then I'm like, I have counterpoints for that myself. So I'm kind of,
okay.
I'm kind of in between. And again, I gave this episode a good rating, but it didn't feel like Slade leaving felt like an ending, but it didn't feel wrapped up, I guess. We'll get more into it when we get to the discussion points.
All right. Well, let's see if we can pick out some favorite moments out of all of that, though.
Absolutely.
All right. Well. So, okay. Once again, I couldn't narrow it down to just one. And besides, you know what? It's fun to talk about the best parts of the episode anyway, so I'm going to give you three yet again.
Okay.
So I've got one action, one funny, and one dramatic. So for action, when Oliver is on the scene trying to get Slade to help him out, and first he has that close-range shootout with a group of bad guys, but then is down to just a knife, and he uses it to take out another handful of bad guys. I loved how he stabs the knife into one guy, then throws a few punches at the next guy that comes in, then he turns around, yanks the knife out of the back of the guy he stabbed, and then stabs the one that he just finished punching. Then a third guy comes in the scene, and he reaches back, grabs the knife out of that guy, and cuts down the third guy with it. I mean, it was a very cool Jason Bourne-like sequence. And I just thought, man, I wonder how much they practiced that. That was well done. It was continuous, no cuts, you know, no editing. It was just a smooth-flowing scene. So very well done, guys. That was cool. Now, the one that I thought was funny that made me chuckle was when Curtis was trying to explain about the 3D printer, and Wild Dog just asked if anyone understood that. And that, the resulting of that was hilarious. So here's my first sound clip to play from that.
Why he needs a weapons-grade 3D printer?
I think I have the answer to that. Drugs. High-end ones. I cross-referenced the two models that were stolen. What they have in common is their capacity to simultaneously print inert polypropylenes and soft material catalyst composites.
Did anyone understand a word of that?
You think Diaz was making reaction wear?
Anyone normal?
Just cracked me up. That's funny. Funny stuff.
Oh, Wild Dog.
And then I'm going to finish it off. I've got a serious moment that I absolutely love. This is one of the big emotional draws of this episode. And it was when Oliver was trying to keep Slade grounded, when Slade was starting to lose hope about getting his son back. I just felt it was a really strong interaction between the two actors, and Manu Bennett just owned the scene. And here's the clip right here, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
When I didn't tell you what happened after Leah and you, I went home to my son, and I promised him I would stay and never leave. I broke that promise.
Broke the promise because of the Mirakuru.
The Mirakuru faded for a while, but when it came back, it was like a storm I could not control. And that monster is what my son is trying to emulate. But it's not Mirakuru with Joe. It's anger and resentment. And I don't know how that can be redeemed.
Well, I didn't think that you could be redeemed. But I'm here. Miles from home, miles from my son, trying to help you save yours. And I can do that because I knew the man that you were before the Mirakuru. That is who your son needs to see. He needs to see his father, the man you are right now, tonight.
Oh, man. See, that calls back to what I was talking about next week, how I was trying to defend why Oliver is giving him a second chance, trying to forgive Slade.
Right.
As much as Slade has done to him, Oliver is trying to see past that and trying to forgive him. And that scene just echoed that so beautifully. And I'm telling you, Manu Bennett, he just killed it. He owned that scene. His acting is just something special. It really is.
Yeah, I think that there's something really interesting in how they're showing Oliver's development in both wanting to forgive, learning to forgive, and trying to forgive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing so by sort of giving him the toughest person to forgive, right? Because this is somebody who's killed his mother and tried to kill his sister, you know, and all of that. And of course, there's reasons, the Mirakuru and all that. But this would be a tough one for Oliver. So they're sort of giving him the toughest challenge when it comes to that emotional growth, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I just and of course, the music. I think another thing I should have pointed out in my opening speech there is that the music for this episode, it was just orchestrated so beautifully. It highlighted every emotion we were supposed to be feeling in every scene. It just intensified. And it was mostly during the serious dramatic sequences. And I'll talk a little bit more about it later because I got some more scenes coming up in our show notes. But yeah, just, yeah, powerful stuff.
I agree.
How about you? What do you got for a favorite moment?
I think I have a first when it comes to a favorite moment. My favorite moment is actually part of a flashback sequence, and I don't think that's ever happened for me before.
If ever. I don't think anyone's ever said a flashback was their favorite scene, but awesome. Let's hear it.
Well, I think it is a first, but if anybody could do it, it'd be Slade. And it was the flashback interaction between Dream Shadow and Flashback Slade. Both of the performers, Selena Jade and Manu Bennett, they play so well off each other. And I think that was a really hard scene to sell. It's a really hard concept to sell because you have the combination of it being a dream factor and also a flashback. And, you know, for that matter, not an Oliver flashback. So it's quite unusual. Mm-hmm. And they absolutely did it. It almost gave me chills seeing the precursor to Slade going after Oliver. They had to give this mission a really concrete and an emotionally impactful reason. And I think they did. Slade has been one of the most iconic long form villains we've seen on the show, and seeing sort of his origin was really moving. There were other great moments throughout this episode. I would sort of give honorary mention to Diggle's feel good family moment there with JJ and Lila. That was sweet. And then Felicity and William playing video games, I just thought was so cute. And there were several good fight sequences throughout. But this, I think, was the strongest in terms of being a critical part in selling this two-part story. It had to have good Slade flashbacks at the right point with the right motivation. And that scene is, I think, what did it for me.
Yeah, I'm going to play a clip right here, but we will definitely be talking a little bit more in depth about this a little bit under discussion points. So here is part of that scene.
You're lying to yourself, Slade. You know he's alive. You've always known, but still you do nothing. Nothing. You know what he did to me. You know what he took from us. And yet here you are, hiding like a coward. Coward. Getting weak. Weak. Give me what you promised. Give me what you promised. Promise.
Get out of my head!
Not until Oliver Queen is dead.
He is dead. He died on the Amazo.
Starlink City resident was found by fishermen in the North China Sea 5 days ago.
Listen, love. You're the only one who can avenge me. Avenge me. You're the only one who can make him suffer. You know why?
I keep my promises.
So good, right?
It sounded even better playing the clip through the headphones here because I didn't catch off the TV how her voice was echoing every time she spoke.
Oh, yeah. It was in such an excellent scene. And yeah. I just feel like that would have been such a technically difficult scene to sell. You know, it's this sort of emotional workout scene with a dream girl from a flashback, but this is also a flashback, but it's a, like, you know, origin story for a villain from a previous season who's also kind of bad. You know, there's just so many layers to it that they kind of had to be able to remind us of the emotion of different parts throughout the series and bring it all together. And I think they did such a good job.
You see, that's a testament to how absolutely the best, God, I don't even know how to word it. It's just it's a testament to Slade and how absolutely amazing his character was that 4 seasons later, they can do a flashback about him and we still feel this much about it and can dig that deep into the emotion. What a testament to the amazing character that Slade was and to how Manu Bennett created that character.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right.
That's
why
I picked that as my favorite moment. I loved it.
It's a wonderful moment to choose. I am right on par with that. There's so many of them in this episode. I got a couple more coming up later, but yeah, it's really hard to, really pick one out that is better than the rest. This episode was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We got some pre-show feedback as always from our friend Aaron. So what do you got highlighted for us from her today?
All right, from Erin, she starts off with just a little comment on something we had mentioned in our previous episode about how Arrow might be the best of the 4 DC shows. She says Arrow can be better at times, but right now she's kind of saying Supergirl and Arrow are pretty even. Supergirl might even be sometimes ahead.
Oh.
She doesn't watch Legends Live, which was kind of her explanation for why a lot of her Legends comments show up in our feedback, which we're very happy to get regardless. And then she jumps into the episode saying the Felicity Chip was the best part of season 4 for her, and she'd love to see it come back as a story, which hopefully it will now that we're kind of getting into Curtis and Felicity's techie stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And she always looks forward to more Renee Mayer comedy moments. And she says, I definitely agree that Juliana was awesome in this episode. Everybody here loves Juliana, of course. She goes on to say, Martin, feel free to answer as well, but as head of the double D moments, this mainly goes to Cammy. Do you think the reveal of Vince's vigilante was meant to stop the Dinah/John vibes, as a lot of the fans are starting to have that? Or is he just meant to be a bump in the road for them and Dinah will put him down, so and so, on and on? And then she also comments on the Dinah Watson scenes, which she loves. To answer the question, I think that there's a quite, if they do have some sort of possible long-term plan of Dinah and John, there's an obvious bump in the road for John in that that would have to be post-tragedy for him because it would be after some sort of family breakup. So, of course, there needs to be bumps in the road for Dinah as well. So, but
we might touch on that a little bit later for sure. I'm not going to answer it now. We might touch on a little bit later.
Yeah, this is a good episode to talk about that because we had quite happily the return of Lila in this episode. So we've got some good stuff there. Yeah, I was excited about that. She wants more Dinah and Watson. I want more Dinah and Watson as well. And then she ends with a thought saying, if Thea ends up being Watson's biggest challenge, that would be interesting. Thea could be the one to take the fall. If it were a team, it could be an exit. If Willa's wanting to opt out, as that may be the case. And she just wants to see Thea get more fun stuff this season. So, yeah.
Yeah, we have no idea when she's coming back. There hasn't been any release or any info about that. So, and we haven't even seen her in the hospital in a coma for the last couple episodes either. So,
yeah, I know when Thea's coming back.
Oh, well.
I won't tell you.
No.
I just want you to know that I know.
All right, well, let's dive into this episode. What's our first discussion point for this week?
Well, of course, it has to be Slade and Oliver's mission. So this week we got the conclusion to the sort of, you know, two-part, or sort of a conclusion to the two-part Slade and Oliver journey. And throughout, we got some cool reveals about Slade's motivation for targeting Oliver after his return from the island, as well as some info about Slade's kids. Of all the Slade reveals and flashbacks and new information, which ones kind of shocked or interested you?
Well, nothing actually really shocked me, but what I loved about this whole flashback was that we got the answer to the biggest question fans had when he came back on a revenge mission in season 2, and we all cried out, why? Why is he trying to get Oliver? It's because we loved Slade so much, and we weren't ever 100% sure of what turned him to Oliver's enemy. We even saw that in Oliver's reaction. He was wondering why for the first half of the season as well. We all guessed it must be because Shadow was killed, but there was no way that one thing would turn him so evil against Oliver, surely. Maybe he could, who knows. And yeah, I mean, he had two sons. What? Grant is the other one, I believe his name was. And I want to ask you, did I hear this correctly? Because I'm a little confused. It sounded like Joe stated that after he witnessed Slade kill that Chinese spy on their camping trip, he knew his mom didn't want Grant around, and we don't know that whole story yet, so his first kill was slitting his brother's throat, just as he saw Big Daddy do on the camping trip. Did I hear that right?
I'm not sure.
Because I played it twice.
It seemed like that could have been implied, but I wasn't sure if he was saying he killed Grant or not. He just said his first kill was when he was 13, but was he really specifically saying that it was Grant?
Well, because his brother? Yeah, man, I should almost pull up the clip, but he had said, you know, you have another son, Grant, whatever, but then he's like, he said something along the lines of, my mom didn't like him, she never wanted him around, and after that is when I had my first kill, just like you did. Like, he strung it together as one complete sentence, so I'm thinking, his first kill was killing his own brother because his mom didn't want him around? So, but then later on at the end of the episode, Slade says, I'm going to go find my other son. Okay, well, maybe if Slade didn't take it the way I took it, maybe that's not what he meant. I don't know, but...
So I have a theory that he was, like, just trying to mess with him, and I don't think his other son is dead.
Oh, but that's a good way to look at it.
Because they left it so intentionally vague. Like, it was supposed to sound like a Cain and Abel type of story, but wasn't exactly.
Yeah, that's a good way. He was maybe trying to trick Slade into, like, just being cruel and vicious and saying, yeah, I killed your other son.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. You guys, when you write in your feedback, write in your theories on that too, because I'm curious how you guys interpreted that. Because I kind of had that question when I heard it for too. Is it seems implied, but it's not specific, and obviously Slade didn't take it literally, so I didn't know if he meant like he was going to go find his other son, like Grant, or if he was like trying to find like Joe's soul, if that was supposed to be metaphorical. Like, I don't really know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you guys what you think on that.
Yeah. So one of, I guess, my favorite returns/reveals was we got to see more of Shadow, which I was really excited. She was always a fave of mine. Her dynamic with Slade was really fun to watch. I've always kind of shipped them back in the island time, which unfortunately that didn't pan out for me. But, you know, we're out here. I sort of won in the end, right? Some sort of dream sequence/villainship was sort of end game, right?
Kind of, yeah.
But it's interesting to see her be the dream voice for both Slade and Oliver so far. Because back in, I think it was season 2, she was a dream voice for Oliver when he was facing off against Slade. So there's some interesting twists there. What did you think of her being the dream voice?
Well, it's kind of funny. You'd think that there's been no time off between those two working together. The maniacal, twisted, spooky chemistry they had was undeniable in this whole sequence.
Yeah.
Like, I read an interview with Manu Bennett, and he said he was absolutely loving getting to work with her again. She really pulls the best out of him, and it totally showed, because, man, he was going crazy, and we witnessed him going crazy and you know, crossing over the dark side. It was awesome. I would love to see flashbacks of them developing that connection. You know, we knew that he loved her, but we never really saw why. Like, where did that love develop? Was it just because they were on the island together? How did that go? I would love to see some flashbacks a little farther back to develop their story a little bit more and see if she felt the same way as him. Because I don't think we ever really saw that she felt the same way. She didn't express it, right?
It was unfortunate because that has to do with the season 1 island flashbacks. And at that point, you know, we're introduced to them as sort of a, you know, dynamic duo, but it so quickly had to turn into this pseudo romance, I guess, for Oliver and Shadow. It sort of lasted for a second. It was like a thing. She was more like his mentor, but anyways, and that was to create the choice between her and Sarah, where he chooses Sarah, sort of.
Yeah.
But because of that, that really shortchanges us on the Shadow and Slate, that's turning into a tongue twister for me.
It's all those S's, I tell you.
Yeah, yeah. It really shortchanged us on the Shadow and Slade romance. I got it out in the end. I got those words out there. and that's unfortunate because they were such a good dynamic. And of course, the actress is lovely and did a great job with everybody. But I think she, as you pointed out, had a particularly good dynamic with Manu. So I do wish we could have seen more of that in the flashbacks and stuff.
Well, yeah. It would show us why Slade was so heartbroken over her and why being on Mirakuru, that was the driving force that made him go crazy, that Oliver let her die. So I think it was just very cool that they were able to bring her back after four seasons and they could still find that deep emotional writing for these two actors to play it out. I mean, this season alone has very strong shades of season two, and that's totally sincerely awesome that we are feeling that type of depth that we had in season two. And this scene with Shadow and Slade, it really sunk that in. And like I said, you would never know that they have not been together for 4 years, because wow, that was powerful performing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, we were left with a bit of a cliffhanger on this story when it came to the present day part of Slade's mission. Mm-hmm. Touched on this a bit when we talked about him going to find his son, assuming he's referring to Grant, assuming Grant is alive.
Right.
But the mission's sort of incomplete, and we're left with those unanswered questions about both of his sons. So what do you expect to see from that going forward? I know you already mentioned that you kind of get the feeling Slade might not be around for a while, unfortunately. And what do you think Slade's doing in the meantime?
Yeah, well, like you said, I'm guessing that I think this part of the story is going to be closed for a while. Joe was beaten. He thinks Slade has turned quote-unquote good. And he seems to be actually quite a bit farther lost than Slade ever was. And it's got nothing to do with the Mirakuru. It's based on anger and maybe a sense of betrayal by his dad, which I think could be harder to come back from once you've stepped so far onto the crazy side. So in the end, he actually just takes off. And as I said, I think Slade was bidding farewell for a while with how he said goodbye to Oliver. And I tell you, just thinking about that scene brings a tear to the eye. Just give me a second here. I'll get past it. Actually,
look, hold on. I'll pass you a tissue.
All right. And while I compose myself, I actually have a clip from there that I want to play, because the music really hits home this emotion.
Don't blame yourself, Slade. It doesn't help.
You know why I do. Never give up on family. That's what you told me. It's time for you to go home.
Where will you go?
I'm gonna keep searching for my son. Both of them. I can't give up.
If you ever need my help again, you don't hesitate to ask.
You have your own son to protect. I'm not going to put that at risk again. You've seen what can happen. Thank you, kid.
That brought tear to the eye.
Aww. And the fact that he calls his son kid too kind of makes it more meaningful that all this time he's been calling Oliver kid, right?
Exactly. And I mean, he took Oliver under his wing back in season one and two to kind of help him survive. So the music, like I was saying in that scene, it's heartbreaking, not in a romantic way, heartbreaking in a lost comrade, a lost brother. Is leaving that, and like I said, the way he walked off into the smoke, that's why I think this is farewell for a while. And I definitely think he's off to find out about his other son, and once he finds his other son, then he's going to start looking for a way to break through to Joe.
Right.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, that's amazing. That scene hit me big time. All right, what's next?
Well, you mentioned the whole thing. Well, we both mentioned the whole thing about him potentially not coming back for a while. Hmm. But if he does and how he does, I was kind of wondering, with Joe now knowing about William, do you think William will be a target? Slade's son may be targeting William. That may be why Slade comes back. What are your thoughts on that? And what are your thoughts on the fact that Joe even knows about William at all?
Well, that could be a path they take when they do bring Joe back into the storyline mix. I'd be surprised if he sticks around now to cause problems. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's... I'll talk about this a little bit more, my feeling of the whole thing, but I think this part of the story is done for now, and I think Joe will be gone as well for now as we transition into the next part of the story. But if we'll see. We'll see if I'm wrong. Maybe next episode we'll deal with him again. I don't know. But my feeling is telling me no.
Yeah. I was kind of curious about that, but I wasn't sure if that was just sort of a little thing they were dropping for later.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Joe's obviously shown that he has lost it and is maybe a little bit more gone mad than Slade ever was, because he's just basing this all on emotion. Like I said, anger and betrayal and stuff. So that can drive a person to do some crazy, crazy things that you just can't come back from. So he might go after William. That's an interesting idea. You know, I can imagine it coming down to a point of Slade having to kill his own son to save Oliver's son. Can you imagine that?
I mean, yeah, but that would be quite darkly, grossly poetic, right? After he's killed Oliver's mother.
Yeah, yeah, I guess if you look at it like that, man.
Ooh. Wow, that will be a lot of storyline to unpack if they get into that. But
and this is
now,
only episode 6. I mean, we've got 18 more episodes roughly to go. So there's a lot of story to tell. And they're really opening the pages to some that could last all season long. This is, I'm so excited for us this season. I can't believe we're only just beginning still.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get back into Slade's storyline stuff, you know, if and when Slade returns. But for now, let's move on to our villain of the week, which was Richard Dragon.
Yeah, he made his first appearance.
Yeah. So you remember a few minutes ago when I said I was about to owe Vigilante an apology?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is where that comes. Okay. So last week I was a little bit critical of Vigilante, and like everything I said still stands. However, I kind of mentioned Vigilante was a bit forgettable. Compared to Richard Dragon, Vigilante was great. I remember Vigilante.
Okay.
I owe Vigilante an apology. Richard Dragon was truly forgettable. I'm so sorry. Anyways, so that ties into my first question.
You wouldn't be salty, Cammy, if you didn't have something like that to say.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
all right.
This is how I put it nicely. I'm going to just say that the villain this week is more metaphorical than literal. So while Richard Dragon was the person the team was tracking down, the focus really ended up being more on Diggle overcoming the steroid issue. And Dragon was just the face of the drugs. And they just gave him, you know, the name of a comic book villain that we've heard of. Okay. That's my nice summary. what were your thoughts on this approach to the drug issue and to this week's sort of villain, literal or figurative?
All right, so this is what I was leading into when I said I'll touch on this a little bit more in depth with what they're doing with Slade and Joe. So
yeah,
in regards to Dragon, it's a good, slow introduction to the Dragon character. So I'm going to try to counter you a little bit here, see if I can make you feel better about it. It's a good, slow introduction to the Dragon character. And what I think they're doing that ties into my idea of this chapter with Slade and Joe being closed for now, and I love the idea of chapters, is that they let that have its proper finish. And now Dragon will be the next chapter in this season as the team deals with him. And I really like that idea. The sense of chapters of a story within a season. It's engaging. It has multiple episode mini arcs that can all come back later on. So we're closing the chapter. This is like chapter 1 of season 6 was Slade and finding his son. Now we moved on to chapter 2. We're introducing Dragon. So as chapter 1 is ending, we introduce Dragon. Slade moves on. dragon now becomes the focus. So we might get, dragon for a couple episodes. You know what I mean? This idea of chapters. This is why I'm okay with what they did.
I do, but you're trying to sell me on a concept where I'm going to have to go through another chapter of dragon.
Possibly. I'm just saying that I like this. I was okay with them just introducing him, and he wasn't like, wham, explosions everywhere. Here I am. I'm Richard Dragon, and I'm the new bad guy. Like, I'm glad they didn't do that, because that would have been corny and weakened everything. This is just a beautiful transition, I think.
Yeah. So. You know, I really liked the metaphorical part of the storyline. I'll give it that. Like, I liked the idea of Diggle overcoming the drug issue. I really liked the way they handled it, where it was actually, it made sense. It wasn't just like Diggle taking drugs. It was like he was taking steroids. He was not trying to really take anything illicit. It just wasn't something that was like FDA approved. You know, it was sort of back channel, but it wasn't like, he didn't realize that it was like some sort of drug lord situation. Mm-hmm. So, and when he did realize, he came clean, and we'll get more into that. So I liked the way the storyline was handled. I liked that Diggle facing off against a villain kind of came down to Diggle facing off against, do I go back for part of the drugs or do I keep going and help the team? And he kept going and helped the team and didn't save any of the steroid that was helping him with the tremor. So that was the real face off in this story. And that was cool. And I liked that. In doing so, I didn't really care so much about the actual human face behind this week's villain situation, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, hat tip to Vigilante. I will remember you slightly more than at least one villain this season.
Right.
Okay. So next question, though. While I'm excited to see Diggle's recovery, you know, yay to Curtis's skills being put to use. I'm, you know, like I said, not left wondering too much more about Dragon compared to the other villains we've seen this season: Caden, James, Black Siren, Vigilante, and we kind of got some teases that all of those might be returning quite soon. You talked a little bit about your thoughts about, you know, Dragon, but what are your thoughts on, you know, the whole, the villain situation as a whole?
Okay, first, I know everyone is glad to see the Diggle story about his tremors and stuff, to see that play out to the end. Pretty much, and that he came clean with everyone. I think everyone was kind of like, good. It was good to see Diggle have his own personal struggle with something, but then realize he needs to rely on his family and his team to get through it. And heck yeah, we totally called that, Curtis stepping in to create something.
Yeah.
And he even mentioned the spine chip, so we know it's not a forgotten plot point. So that was good, and I mean, way to go, Diggle. I love that whole scene. That I think that's coming up later. I just love that whole scene. As for Dragon, I think I pretty much stated already that I like this approach. They didn't make him out to be this big bad yet, just merely an introduction. With some mystery as to what he's going to be about this season. I mean, they landed a great actor, well known from other series that he's been part of, so you know they have to have plans for him. If they cover his story angle for a couple episodes, then go to Caden James for a couple, I think that'll work out fine.
I'll look forward to Caden James. No, I don't mean to, you know, I love a good villain, so it's fine regardless. But yeah, this one I was just sort of like, I'm looking forward to a few others returning, I guess. But the concept, the way this drug storyline was written, I'm with you on that. I really liked it. A lot of what I have to say about that actually ties into sort of our overview of the whole, you know, state of the team, because it was the focus of the Team Arrow story was Diggle handling the tremor issue. And, you know, we, you know, talked about Diggle's response. You know, I kind of want to hear more of your thoughts about Diggle's response, but also what did you think of the team's response?
Yeah, well, just to tie the knot on that one, I think we're going to have to wait and see what they do with Dragon, and then you'll be able to decide better if you like it or not. So with Diggle and the team's response, I actually thought it was perfect. Each one of them responded just how I felt they should and they would. Renee kind of made a joke out of it that he has saved him more times and he's put him in harm's way, so Diggle's ahead of the game on that one. And mm-hmm. Curtis was jokingly upset that he didn't come to him first for help after what he did for Felicity, which was funny, especially as he was leaving the scene. And then I think Dinah was actually kind of relieved. And maybe it made her think about what she's doing about her ex, because we saw her pulled out. I think it looked like a Zippo lighter or something. She's obviously still hiding a little bit, because I think she's undecided as to how she's going to handle what's happening with her ex right now, Vigilante. So again, I'm sure some people went, what? More secrets still? Come on. But I think she hasn't made that transition herself yet. Like we just saw Diggle do. She's got to go through that little bit of a struggle herself now too. Because she's the new one on the team. So I don't think she feels fully ready to confide in them everything. And
share her demons yet.
Yeah, and get help with them yet. So
All
right, so to highlight what I was just trying to say, here's a clip actually about that scene.
So you're saying the tremor started before Black Siren showed her face in Star City?
Yes. And that's why, Renee, I owe you the biggest apology of all. You should have known what was going on before we ever got to that bridge, man. My pride almost got you killed. I betrayed your trust. I put your lives in danger. All I can ask is that you forgive me, but I understand if you can't.
Getting shot wasn't great. But if I'm counting the times you saved my life against the times you almost got me killed, you still ahead.
I, for one, am incredibly offended.
And you have every right to be cursed.
That you didn't come to me first for help treating you. I mean, I created a chip to help a woman walk, people.
He's got a point, John. Might be time to outsource this little problem.
Yeah. I'll stand it. So, have you already had an electromyogram? Wait, what am I talking about? We need to start off with an NCV test first.
Curtis, it's been a long night. Is there any way we can do this in the morning?
Sure thing. It would be my honor. It would be my pleasure.
Kiss ass.
What the?
You waiting on a special apology because you deserve one?
No. Just waiting to make sure you're okay.
Really?
Really.
Well, I'm going to give you one anyway. Dinah, I lied to you. And I'm sorry, but I'll make you one more promise. There'll be no more secrets between you and me.
No more secrets.
Had to let that play out. That just gives me goosebumps all over my arms.
Great music, right?
Yeah, it's the music. That's why I let it play out, because each character is just expressing their own personal way that they forgive Diggle, and he doesn't mm-hmm. have to carry that weight alone. And it's a moment about our team kind of coming together and gelling. And I loved it. I loved it. And Oliver's not even there. It's these guys. So when Oliver comes back, he's going to have this solid, cohesive team that he's going to get to lead. And I can't wait.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that they had, you know, so Diggle has naturally taken a rightful leadership position with the newbies. You know, I mean, they're not really that new, but they're sort of new, right? Mm-hmm. And the people that he hasn't told yet are Oliver and Felicity. So he hasn't told the rest of OTA. What response do you expect when he does tell, like, the oldies rather than the newbies?
You know, I actually expect it to be more of the same type of response. I think Oliver is going to give him all the support he needs, because Diggle has done that for him tirelessly these last mm-hmm. 6 years. And Felicity, I think, is going to give him some grief in her own mm-hmm. fun way. Like, she's not going to mean it or anything, but she's going to, you know, kind of give him a bit of rub into the ribs kind of thing, if you know what I mean.
I think they're going to be really caring towards him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I it's going to be different than him saying this to a team of people he leads. It's more of a team of people he's a part of, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, yeah. Somebody else he did tell was Lila.
Yeah.
So that was nice to see. And we got the return of Lila, which we were super happy about. I was pretty pumped to see her return this week, as well as baby JJ. What did you think of the Diggle family moments this episode? We got a good few. It was cute and well, a bit steamy.
My God, the steam in that opening sequence. Holy, like we usually get that with Oliver and Felicity or Oliver and Sarah right. or Oliver and Laura. Like this, I
just
think that's
Oliver and Felicity. Those are the only ones you're allowed to talk about. No, I'm kidding.
I see. But my point being that it's always Oliver. I think this is the first time we've ever seen Diggle get some heat on screen like that.
Right.
Way to go, man. It was great to see Lila in a family supportive role for this instead of seeing her at her Argus position. And that we saw JJ is growing up and he's actually talking now. Like, wow, that kid grew fast. So that's good. I just think these moments with his family, it lent some depth to this storyline that we're dealing with, because everybody was kind of, I'm a little tired of the Diggle thing and whatever, because we weren't seeing truly how it's affecting him or affecting everyone around him. And I think with what Diggle is struggling with, it also shows us his bond with Lila is strong.
Yeah.
So this, it really added some depth to the storyline. And I think to bring this all together full circle, this whole sequence with him and Lila, the steamy stuff and her supporting him with some tough love and telling him what to do and that or whatever, I'm just going to be in the background here waving bye-bye to the double D theories as they slip farther away.
Oh, no. This totally fueled it, actually, for me.
No way.
No, okay, let me clarify, and I know that I say this every week, but I have to say this every week because I never want anything I'm saying taken out of context. I'm not rooting for the double D theories. I'm just saying I think it's going to happen. Okay, you've heard me say that like 17 times. Moving on.
But it was beautiful. It was seriously beautiful between these two for sure.
I love the family moments, though. That was so cute. The actor they have playing JJ is adorable, and yeah.
Again, I think this kind of closes this chapter of Diggle's story, where it'll continue on in the sense where Curtis is going to help him out, but I think the struggle and the lying and stuff, that's now done. So
yeah. So speaking of baby JJ, seems like everyone on Team Arrow has a sort of a plus kid storyline these days. You know, Renee might be getting Zoe back. Diggle has baby JJ. Felicity's taking care of William. You know, we've had a lot of references of that. Are you liking the way they've handled kids on the show?
I think they're actually doing pretty great with the kids on there. It's not interfering with the story. In fact, I think it's making the lives of our characters feel more organic and real. And it's showing our heroes dealing with everyday stuff and having what I really like is that it shows that they all have somewhere to go after their missions are done. They have a home, they have a family, they got somewhere to go chill out with, to connect with or whatever, something away from crime fighting.
Yeah.
And I think it makes our show feel like it's really coming to life in its sixth season. Like we're part of something special. And I think this whole episode kind of gave me that feeling that we're on a path now with our characters that we've been on for 6 years and we know them so well. We're getting to know their families. We're getting to feel like we're part of this family. And it's not just about meeting the team at the Arrow Cave and going out on a mission. They're real people. They have families at home waiting for them, hoping that they're coming home alive. That whole kind of feeling. And that's the point that Arrow is at right now. And like I said, it's feeling very, very organic and very real. I think that's where a lot of the emotion is coming from. It's not just a light, flaky action comic show anymore.
Yeah, it's the relationships and the family and all of that that sort of raises the stakes. It makes you care about them more than just being like disposable superheroes. You kind of get invested in their lives.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, that's some good deep conversation. I think we should move on to some transmissions. What do you say?
Absolutely.
Here we go. All right, we got our first email from Christy, our friend, and Christy says, I think I was a little dissatisfied by the conclusion of the present-day storyline with Slade and Joe. It didn't seem like we really resolved anything or made any progress in their relationship. However, the flashbacks to Slade's time recovering from Alder's arrow to the eye was fascinating. I'm glad we finally got to see the moment when he snapped and resolved to get revenge on Oliver to lead us into season two. Yeah, my sentiments exactly. I did enjoy all the elements of the action back in Star City. I enjoyed seeing Diggle wrestle with whether to risk his life to get more drugs and possibly compromise the team or just let them burn and come clean. I loved how mature Renee was when Diggle finally told the truth. Yeah, totally agreed. I love that one bright spot at the end of the episode with Felicity, Oliver, and William. William is finally warming up to Oliver, and I hope that doesn't immediately go away when Oliver finally suits up again. Well,
yeah.
I see. Yeah, I think we were talking about before. I think William is going to be part of the protagonist to get Oliver to suit up again. So we'll have to see which way that happens.
I think so too. I think he's going to, through his, you know, through the way he's interacting with Felicity and Oliver now, I think he's going to start to see them as good people, you know, and lose any of that past, you know, Oliver's a bad guy, you're the villain, you know, all of that from the beginning, and start to see him as a hero. And that will be the progression. And that will be quite a, you know, finale type of moment, is William seeing his dad as a hero, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I think he's going to start seeing all of them as heroes, and he's going to realize, hey, my dad's the good guy. Like, this is so cool. Yeah. And he's going to be proud of him and slowly start to understand.
It'll be so heartwarming.
It will be.
Yeah.
All right, we got a voicemail in from Destiny Dazzler.
Hi, Aero Squad, it's Destiny Dazzler. I just got done watching the episode. I really enjoyed it this week. It gets a 9 for me. I loved the parallels between Slade and his son in the past and Slade and his son in the present. Like the fight with the sticks in the past and then the swords in the present. I really loved that. I loved seeing Hallucination Shadow again. I thought that was super cool. I really related to John this episode the more and more that I thought about it. And the shakes and the tremors that he's having. Because of the condition that I have, my hands and my legs can shake uncontrollably sometimes. So I totally understand that not being able to control your own body and how frustrating that can be. But I was so proud of him for being honest with the team and telling them what was going on with him. I'm excited to see the technology that Curtis develops for him and to see if it becomes part of his and Felicity's company. I'm just really excited to see where that storyline goes. So I will talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Aww. Good thoughts.
I love it when our fans can find something really deeply personal to connect with on this show.
Yeah.
That always makes me feel good. And that's cool. I'm glad you found something in the Diggle storyline to really, really find some feels. That's awesome. Thanks, Destiny.
Yeah, and it makes us happy that you guys feel comfortable sharing that with us too. Like, I'm happy that this is a safe space where, you know, you can share how this story affects you and how you relate to these characters, and I just think that makes it really meaningful for us too.
Exactly. Well said, Cammy. All right, who's next? We got an email from I'm Just Here for Felicity. Go ahead,
Kelly. She writes in and she says, Lila, in all caps. She says, it's always good to see her. Hopefully she's not showing up now just to add to the potential Diggle/Dinah plot. I think Lila has a plot all of her own. She goes on to say, John, when you make dark alley deals for drugs, can you really be that surprised when your supplier shows up at a crime scene?
Good point.
Right. Poor Oliver, his comment to Felicity is going to make him putting back on the suit even more dramatic now, referring to Oliver's comment there about making the right decision, putting the suit away. And then Curtis talking about Felicity's chip at the end was perfect. I can't wait to hear Cammy jump all over the No More Secret scene with John and Dinah, because she can't not touch that, right? I mean, you're right. I think that there are many secrets and bumps in the road for John and Dinah's friendship. Definitely friendship. That's friendship. That's all you guys have seen, right?
I wonder if the angle she's meeting, though, is the fact that throughout all the DC shows, it's keeping secrets from the team has been a big struggling point, and everyone gets frustrated. Like, come on, Diggle, tell everybody. And here's Dinah saying, yeah, no more secrets, as she walks off with her own secret still in hand. So I think she wants you to probably get up on your soapbox about that one.
Well, yeah, that too, because I think that was what the keeping secrets from friends, teams, etc. I mean, that's been my gripe across all the shows, and it's definitely been my gripe, especially when it does come to both friendships, but especially romantic relationships. I think that the keeping secrets thing has wrecked some romantic relationships on Arrow, and you know, they've had to fix that and grow through that. And obviously this is a case where it's just friends, they're just partners, but regardless, you know, the secrets thing, I just feel like they should know better at this point. But she, again, like we talked about, she's new. She doesn't necessarily trust these people with her demons and her darkest secrets and stuff. So I get where she's coming from, keeping the vigilante emotional connection potentially under wraps. Yeah. So she goes on to say, what are your thoughts on Slade? Do you think he'll be replaced long term with his son after he saves him in a sense, or will they both disappear for a long time only to pop back up as guests? I can't see Slade killing Joe without taking himself out in the process. So where do you think the story is going?
Well, I think hopefully I answered that with what I was talking all about Slade earlier. So yeah, you kind of know where I stand on that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that Slade will return at least once more this season, but I have a feeling that will revolve more around Oliver and his son more so than Slade and any new development with his son. But, you know, we'll see. I would always like to see more of Slade.
Yeah, and I kind of hypothesized about Slade possibly having to kill Joe to save William. So that's just an idea. Who knows? But, yeah, I mean, I really don't think it's going to come back for a while. But thanks for your email. Moving on, we've got a voicemail from someone brand new. She was quite excited to get in touch with us and be part of Arrow Squad. Her name is Allison, and she actually sent us a voicemail. Here she is.
Hi, Arrow Squad. My name is Allison. I'm calling from Colorado, and this is my first time calling in. I just wanted to let you guys know I think you do a great podcast, and I love listening in every week. I'm a huge Arrow fan, and I also watch all the other DC shows on the CW, and Arrow is by far my favorite. And I wanted to give some feedback about last week's episode, Promises Kept, which aired yesterday. I loved the relationship between Slade and Oliver, as always, and it was really interesting to see their dynamic when his son Joe was back on screen, and it was just really cool to see them in action. Deathstroke is one of my favorite anti-heroes. And also wanted to say, as a neurologist, at the end of the episode when Curtis is forgiving Diggle and telling him he wished he had come to him for advice and help, and he talked about getting NCV and EMG studies for his arm, that's totally correct, because we do those kinds of tests for people who have nerve problems in their arm. So props to whoever was consulting on that, because they did a good job and Curtis was right on point. Anyway, I love the show, love you guys, and keep doing what you're doing, and I will be tuning in again next week. Take care, guys. Bye.
Oh, now that is so much
that
fun.
That was so sweet. Oh my God.
Thanks so much, Allison, just for all the kind words. That really warms our hearts to hear it.
It does. And what good information and thoughts. Like, yeah. Wow. I didn't know anything about the neurology aspect of it.
No, to check in about the Curtis and what he was speaking properly, or if he was speaking properly about the medical procedures. So yeah, that's kind of cool that they actually did that right.
Yeah. Flash, we have some pretty smart listeners.
We do. And let us just say welcome to the show, Allison.
Absolutely.
Awesome to have
you. Thank you for calling in. And next up, we have an email from Stormy Woods, one of our regulars. And she says, I'll be generous and give this episode a 7 out of 10. Oh, if I'm being honest, I'm more interested in my phone than parts of the episode, because the Slade storyline continues to confuse me, mostly when it comes to the Mirakuru. So she says, the episode made it feel like he could control the drug rage, like turning off a switch. What actions of Slade's from the past 6 years are supposedly the drug, and which are his choice? That's an interesting question.
Yeah, well, I hope everything we said earlier in this episode kind of helped you with some of that. I don't think he was switching it on and off. I tried to address it before with the Mirakuru. I think any darkness or that you might have inside you. I think the Mirror Crew totally enhances that and brings that to the forefront, where you can only focus on the raw emotions of like anger and revenge and probably even like depression and things like that. Like the really negative emotions are, I think, what Mirror Crew really enhances and highlights and brings to the forefront, hence turning you into a person you probably don't want to be and maybe you really aren't. So I think that's right. What Slade was dealing with is that the worst parts of him were being brought to the surface and totally enhanced and supercharged. And that's, you know, that's how the Mirror Crew affected him.
Yeah. I think, you know, I get the confusion because I think that there were a lot of unanswered questions in this episode. The next part of her email gets more into that. She says, the Joe part of the story couldn't really get into because this kid started killing as a 13-year-old, which is very psychotic. Could you clear something up for me? Did Joe admit to killing his brother Grant? I rewound 5 times and still couldn't understand.
Yeah,
I think we were pretty confused about that as well, Stormy.
Well, I am almost fully sure that he did say that. Mm-hmm. Just because it was strung together in one full sentence that,
right?
You know, I have a brother. My mom didn't like him. She didn't want him around, and that was my first kill. And I killed him just the way you did. Your dad killed that Chinese guy. I think, and then you made the very valid point that he was probably saying that to trick Slade into thinking he lost his only other son, his second son.
Right.
I think it's just that's how far gone Joe is, that he's willing to psychologically attack his father like that. So I believe he said it. Now, whether it's true or not, we're going to find that out next time Slade comes back, I believe, is my guess.
She goes on to talk about what she did like in the episode. She says, I loved Lila and Diggle's scenes. I really missed seeing her. Diggle coming clean to Lila and some of the team scenes were really well done. I can't wait for Diggle to come clean to Oliver and Felicity. I think those scenes will have a lot of emotional weight. And she says, Felicity and William bonding over the video games was cute. The little scene of William with Oliver and Felicity was such a nice family scene, and I hope to see more. As for Dragon's first impression as a villain, he was totally forgettable. Okay, I'm with you on that.
You're not alone there.
And then prediction, I think we see Joe again, and he will be coming after William. Oh. I love Oliver, but mentioning William when Joe was standing there was massively dumb.
Yeah, good point there. Yeah, very, very good point. Awesome. Well, thanks for that, Stormwoods. Hopefully we cleared a few things up for you there. You'll have to let us know. All right, our very last feedback. Man, we got some good feedback and lots of it this week. So our last one is from our friend Dad L. And he says, hello, squad. I feel like a broken record. Arrow continues to deliver good episodes. Yeah, me too. I thought the Slade flashbacks were excellent. I am going to hand wave the sketchy behavior of Mirror Crew the way it seemed to fade and then come back a year later. The payoff was too good. I wonder what he's referring to the way it faded and came back a year later. Is that when his son rescued him and he was training with him and stuff, that whole sequence, and then suddenly
and then it was sort of like triggered or activated by the visions and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's why Shadow was showing up. I think that's the trigger to bring it. Yeah, we don't fully understand how the chemical works or whatever, but it obviously wasn't out of his system fully, and he just needed a trigger to make it happen. Yeah. So he continues, I enjoyed the themes of family and promises in these last two episodes. I did some research, and I think it's Slade's other son that we actually saw in the Legends of Tomorrow episode, Star City 2046.
Oh, interesting.
Oh. I'm going to have to look back at that episode and see if they just call him Grant in that episode.
Yeah.
Interesting. If I remember, I'll dig into that. Awesome. Please, he says, let this episode squash any further shipping of Diggle and Dinah. Yes! Thank you, Dado.
I don't ship them. I don't. I just think they might want us.
So you're sounding like a broken record.
I ship Diggle and Lila. I promise. I'm just calling it how
A second. We're all shipping Dinah and Flash. Let's just get that straight and clear right now.
Did I say Diggle and Dinah, or did I say Diggle and
Lila? I don't know what you said. You didn't say Flash. That's all I'm
No, but I was saying I like Diggle and Lila. Like, I like
yes, you did.
Them together. I'm not, anyway, yes.
All right, so it Dinah continues.
And Flash, 100%. Continue, yes.
Diggle and Lila have always been so good together. I don't see them getting rid of Lila anytime soon. It was a great twist that Diggle's supplier was Dragon. We all knew Diggle would eventually do the right thing. This episode gets 8 out of 10 moves with your mind, not your eyes. Dad-El asks Father Krypton. Yeah, exactly. That's just fun. Just fun to have someone on my side with all that. But again, thanks for your email. I will look into that Tomorrow's Legends thing. That is something I'm very curious about.
Yeah, that is.
I'm just writing a note right now to remind myself. So, awesome, guys. Well, thank you, as always, for your fantastic feedback. That is amazing. We have a last-minute little tiny tidbit of... something. So I'm gonna have trouble sleeping tonight because this is just too much fun.
It's social media feedback. Somebody gave Arrow Squad Twitter account some feedback. It's just four little green hearts, but we thought we'd mention it anyways. Flash, who was it?
My personal favorite, Diana, as in Juliana Harkavy, tweeted to Arrow Squad four green hearts. And
wow.
Oh, my God, that's awesome. That means she remembers our little moment. So I will have to
confirmed.
Treat
you guys are canon now.
Flash, we are canon down. Now.
Yeah.
Send the writers to the writer room. Let's include that a little farther down. I'll be heading out to Vancouver to film my scenes shortly. All right. That brings us to the end of our episode for this week, Cammy.
Wow. That was great. This was fun. Thanks to everyone for coming along for the ride.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm so happy. I'm so excited. I could say it's all because of how good our episodes are, but the real honest truth is because Dinah loves the Flash. But yes. No, seriously, Arrow is so good this season. I'm overjoyed at how awesome the episodes are, how great the acting is, how great the stories are, how much fun we're getting to have talking about it, and that we get to do this full time this season, and all of our listeners, they're on board with us. That we, you know, we're going back and forth with good points and bad points. This, and we're six episodes in.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. This is a podcasting dream come true right now. It really is.
Well, our next episode is entitled Thanksgiving, and it will actually air on Thanksgiving in the U.S.
Right.
I realize I'm a little bit past Canadian Thanksgiving for you guys.
A month ago already.
It's Thanksgiving in the U.S., and it will actually air on Thanksgiving evening.
Awesome, guys. Well, until then, have yourselves a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. This is The Flash, signing off.
And it's Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media at goldenspiralmedia.com.